from newstalkzb.co.nz, it's the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ.
G'day there, and welcome to the rewrap. All the best bits from the Mike Hosking Breakfast on News Talk ZB in a sillier package. And on the Thursday edition, we have the death knell for MMP, Malcolm Gladwell, thinker, writer. We go driving with Mike and find out that he can't actually do it. And speaking of driving, binge racing, what is that? Is it anything to do with driving? It isn't. Just a little bit of spoiler there. But first up, is today really decision day?
No one knows which way Peters is going. Some suggestions are, and I think we heard it from Peters just a couple of moments ago, they've still actually got to work that out for themselves, which would indicate they've got a couple of very good deals in front of them. The options are a coalition with Labour and the Greens, a coalition with National, or a confidence and supply deal with National, or a confidence and supply deal with Labour and the Greens. It is possible, I suppose, although we assume unlikely, that between now and the announcement someone like the Greens go can't do it, too hard. It's possible, I suppose, although unlikely, that New Zealand First can't decide, or they're split, or there is no deal. But the real news for me is not Peters. That will be the headline, of course. That'll be the headline for the day. Who he chooses, what job he ends up with, how many cabinet posts there are, if it's a coalition, or why he didn't go with a coalition if it doesn't. But once those headlines fade, as all headlines do, the important thing is the big picture. Does it stick? Is it workable? Does it feel like something that has prospect? Because beyond the circus that we've witnessed, there is actually a country to run, and a very successful country at that. We are taking in today's decision at least 9 years of solid economic performance, a story to be proud of, and at least in part, tossing it to the wind. Today is not so much about today, but the 1,100-odd days that follow.
Oh, is it only 1,100 days before we get to do this all over again? How fun that will be. Because you've got to love MMP, right, Mike?
We need to remember that for the past 9 years, MMP has actually worked exceedingly well. That's not an endorsement of the system. It's simply a statement of fact. A four-party deal has led this country to growth and prosperity with remarkable stability. Surely the truth is for all of those gnashing their teeth at this current mess, that if you can go back into the 80s, the early 90s, before we voted FPP out, that what we used to have was clearly so flawed, we decided to change it. Otherwise, why would we have changed it, for goodness sake? So, let's have a look at it. The upside of first past the post was what? Well, you got a result on the day. You got a good, clear, clean government. Each person in the parliament was actually elected in an area they represented. They were answerable to the people who put them there. Downside, you got governments that ran rampant. Once the vote was over, opposition was a pointless exercise for 3 years. Whoever won basically did what they want. To be fair to the system, we weren't nearly as interested or indeed sophisticated as we are today. Things like the Fiscal Responsibility Act that Ruth Richardson ushered in brought in a new professionalism and accountability to government. People like Muldoon gave politics and economics a bad name. It was a different age. And as such, the resentment that rose was entirely predictable. And the moment a well-organised alternative was put up, we grabbed it, and here we are with MMP. Other downside, of course, was there were only two parties, therefore no real choice apart from Social Credit and the Values Party, of course, who were never taken seriously. Oh, and Bob Jones, who sort of was for a while, but ultimately got nowhere. MMP, better selection of parties, although this year's result makes that increasingly hard to argue. The mad days of rampant bulldozer policy are over. Deals have to be done, therefore a certain level of collegial cooperation is required. Downside, too many people answerable to no one. People on lists who wouldn't recognise a constituent if they were smacked over the head by one. And of course, the spectre of a minor party holding the balance of power. The inescapable conclusion is, having seen and lived through both, no system is perfect. No system is perfect. And as such, wanting to change it now because you don't like what we're watching is not ultimately an answer.
I still think we should give anarchy a go. Yeah, no system at all. Because, I mean, this feels like that anyway. I'm full of bad ideas, mate. Malcolm Gladwell's full of good ideas. And Mike talked to him about some of them today.
So you got the tipping point right. So that's an enormous success. That must have changed you. You've gone from a bloke who's writing for a magazine into a bloke who's a bestseller. Did that fundamentally change things for you?
Well, we have to do a randomized control experiment to discover whether that's true. I don't think I did. I mean, my life is pretty much the same as now as it was back then. I think people return my calls more quickly. That's been a lovely thing that's happened. As you get well known, people trust you I think, a little bit more, or at least were willing to talk to you more. And I've met people that I would never have met had I remained unknown. So the work becomes, in some sense, easier. You're also a little bit more of a target when you do things that aren't quite up to snuff, which I suppose is all fair at the end of the day. But like I said, no, it's not. It's not like being a. If you're an actor and you are in a hugely successful film, people stop you as you walk down the street, or if you're a, that's not what success means if you're a writer. So I think it's not the same, the kind of celebrity writers have is so minor and narrow that it's hard to imagine it having any great personal consequence.
Seems like a very interesting guy. I've got to admit, although obviously he's very famous and respected, I don't actually know very much about him. So I'm going to check out his podcast, The Revisionist History, and maybe you would like to do the same. Or maybe you've got better things to do. I thank you for making this podcast your priority, as you should. Maybe Mike needs to make brushing up on his road code a priority, given what happened on 7 Sharp last night.
And so I got behind the wheel of this car, little Suzuki Swift, a manual. Hadn't driven a manual for a considerable period of time either. And so I failed the three criticals. I got three criticals. I was a competent driver, and I don't say that to blow my own trumpet, but I was a competent driver, and that's what the instructor said. But I failed on these three criticals, which I would argue is one of the fundamental problems of getting a license in this country. It's too damn hard. And you'd be better off giving people licenses in a more easy way and testing them on a regular basis. One of the things I failed on, and I'll try to explain this if you missed it, in a way you understand. Coming up to a roundabout, there's an option of turning left, there's an option of going straight through, or there's the option of, I suppose, doing a U-turn and going right around the roundabout and coming out the other way. Under a law that's changed since I got a license, when you enter a roundabout and you're not turning left, in other words, you are going straight, you need to, having gone past the bit where you could have turned left, to then indicate left, to indicate you're not turning right, to indicate you're going straight. I didn't do that for fairly obvious reasons, hence I got a critical. It is the stupidest rule going. There is no purpose to it. No one is a better driver because of it. People aren't going to crash because of it. What you want on the road are people who are not going to drink, not going to drug, who are going to put their seatbelts on, who are not going to get distracted by smoking, eating, listening to music, or wandering around looking at other things on the road.
Weird that they didn't pick up on how drunk and drugged you were.
Exactly. Well, I hid that. I looked calm the whole time and I had my sunglasses on so you couldn't see my eyes. But you see what I'm saying? They've got so many rules and regulations now, little finickety things about checking your blind spot on a three-point turn. It's all pointless. It's not real world. Real world is about getting out there, surviving on a day-to-day basis, not running into anybody and not having anyone else run into you.
To be fair, at a roundabout, showing people which way you're going to go, that's reasonably helpful.
Unless you are going straight.
At that point, you're not going straight.
You are going straight.
No, you're turning left off the roundabout.
No, you're not.
At any point that you turn off the roundabout, you're turning left.
On some roundabouts, you can go straight. This roundabout, you were going straight.
You drove over the top of the roundabout.
Straight through the roundabout. You weren't deviating. There was no deviation. There was no other point on the road when you're going in a straight line.
So what if the roundabout is one that's got five exits?
Five exits you probably would have to. I would agree with that, and I would have done that.
What if it's one that's got three exits?
I would probably have done that as well, but that's not the rule.
Even if one of those exits is sort of more or less straight from where you've...
But that's the problem.
You see?
It doesn't accommodate for all of the scenarios on the road, hence everybody gets confused, hence you've got too many damn rules, and hence I failed. Fortunately, they don't test you. They just let you loose, and here we are.
Yeah, I certainly hope self-driving car technology is commonplace by the time I'm, 70, 75, 80, when you have to reset your license, and I just won't bother because I'll be self-driven everywhere, and that will be great. Binge racing. I hadn't heard the term, so is Mike ahead of the curve, ahead of me? Can this be?
Have you heard of binge racing? Binge racing is the new binge watching. So you binge watch, some people do. So you get a series, downloads, whatever, there it is, bang, you knock off seven episodes all at once. You binge watch it over the weekend. Binge racing is not only watching your seven episodes, this is a thing according to Netflix, Binge racing is not only watching your 7 episodes, it's watching it as fast as you possibly can and outpacing your mates. Going, I've already watched it, done, bang.
Well, the best way to achieve that, of course, is with a bit of screen stacking. Just watch multiple episodes at the same time.
Exactly. Actually, I don't think anyone's thought of that. I think that's next level binge racing. I just wonder if we're wishing life away, that we're not sitting down and, you know, just...
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Yeah, I'm living my life like I'm wishing it away. That's what a cool way to live your life, isn't it? I'm deliberately doing that. Thankfully, although I didn't know it was called that, I have been doing binge racing for, you know, forever. It's because a person I work with here often will spoil the plots of things if I don't hurry up and watch the episodes at the same time that they've watched them. That's the only reason. I'm not that competitive, really. I am Glenn ZB. That was the rewrap for Thursday. If you're binge racing this, I'll see you immediately. If you're not, then I guess I'll just see you tomorrow.